The month of June has been hijacked by the anti-Christian culture to show their pride in something God calls an abomination. When you support AFR, you help us continue to stand for godly values and provide the resources for you to stay in the know about the enemy's tactics. To say thank you for your gift this month, we'll give you the booklet, Inside the LGBTQ Push of the 1990s, to help strengthen your convictions. Just go to afr.net/offers. afr.net/offers.
Welcome to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve, Senior Pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas. Now, here's Pastor Jeff.
Well, good Friday morning and welcome to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. Hope you're having a great morning. Looking forward to the weekend. Debbie and I are going to Little Rock this weekend and to see my youngest daughter. We're looking forward to some time away, and then we have a big family trip planned later in next week. And so we always get excited when all the grandkids get together and the siblings get together. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Well, I have in the studio today with me my friend, Dr. Sudhir Jayaprabhu, and there will be a test later to spell his name. Sudhir is born in India, came to America when you were 10?
8 years old.
8 years old. His dad was a professor at Dallas Theological Seminary.
He was a student.
Student. And pastored, and Sudhir grew up at First Baptist Dallas, if yes. I remember correctly, correct. Along with his brother. And he has been a gynecologist obstetrician now for how many years, Sudhir?
For 25 years.
25 years.
I think I've delivered, I was kind of trying to calculate how many babies I've delivered, probably around 4,000 or so.
Oh, wow.
Up to 5,000, so.
Yeah, and so we're going to talk today about the subject of abortion and the abortion pills, and you know that in the big, beautiful bill, Trump's bill that he got passed by the Senate and the House, signed into law, Planned Parenthood gets defunded, and the $500,000 a year or $500 million. It's $500 million. Yeah, it's crazy amount of money that taxpayers are giving to this this organization that exists to murder babies, to rip babies apart in the womb. And in case you wonder, what does the Bible have to say about that? Many passages. I want to read to you from Ezekiel 16. Then the word of the Lord came to me, Ezekiel says, saying, "Son of man, make known to Jerusalem her abominations." And then it begins to list abominations. And here is what it says in verse 21. You slaughtered verse 20. Moreover, you took your sons and daughters, whom you had born to me, and sacrificed them to idols to be devoured. Were your harlotries so small a matter? You slaughtered my children and offered them up to idols by causing them to pass through the fire. Okay. Passing through the fire was how they would offer their babies to the gods of the Canaanites. Molech was a god of the Ammonites. Chemosh was a god of the Moabites. They would do this with Baal. They would offer their children, and the false god would have his hands. This false god of stone would have his hands outstretched, and the fire would be stoked in his belly, and they would put their children in those hands and offer them up as a child sacrifice. God says, were your harlotries so small a matter that you added this abomination? So the Bible clearly tells us that life begins at conception. And Sudhir, you and I have had this conversation. If life doesn't begin at conception, well, when would it begin?
Right. So there's really no doubt that life begins at conception. From a biological point of view, there was a beautiful study done where they looked at 30,000 embryologists from all over the world. So embryologists are the ones that create life basically in the lab, right? So they take the egg and the sperm and put them together in IVF forms, and they create life in the lab. And do you know, Pastor Jeff, how many of them thought life began at conception?
How many?
97%. So even if none of them believed it, it still would be true. However, there's no doubt biologically that life begins at conception. Mm-hmm. So then theologically, you know, there's no doubt there, as you pointed out. And, you know, we know the story of Jesus and John the Baptist and mm-hmm. how that happened. I mean, that's probably the best picture of life beginning at conception. But so the argument then comes down to the philosophical side of when life begins, because you really can't argue those other two sides. So people have come up with the thought of, okay, life begins when we have consciousness. Mm-hmm. And so how do we know when a baby has consciousness? I mean, who knows,
right?
I mean, and so people will say things like, well, size matters. You know, how can you say a cell is a living being, or, you know, or a baby at 32 weeks. So they come up with these arbitrary definitions that once a baby can live out by itself at 24 weeks, now we have life. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, once the baby passes that 7-inch part of the mother's womb and comes to the outside, right, now we have life. You know, so you come up with all these things that really don't make a lot of sense when you really think about it, right? Because you gotta equate that to the other end as well. So if you say, you know, well, it's not life because we're depending on the mother at that point, well, what about the person that's depending on dialysis?
Right.
Is that person alive or not? You know, can we, or life support of some kind? Mm-hmm. You know, can you pull life support? So whatever you use at the beginning of life, you've got to use that same argument throughout. And so Professor Peter Singer from Princeton University is probably the foremost person on this topic. And although I hate his conclusion and it turns my stomach, it's probably the right conclusion, you know, and I respect him because he takes it all the way through. He suggests that we're able to even kill 2-year-olds, mm-hmm. because 2-year-olds, you know, don't have consciousness yet either. So if they're troublesome, you know, I've got a 2-year-old right now, and and he runs around everywhere, but he is a lot more trouble at this point than, you know, potentially can be. He's the joy of our life, of
sure.
course. But you know, the difficulties with dealing with the terrible twos. And you know, he says, hey, you can kill babies up to that point if because they don't have consciousness yet. And that's kind of the, you know, and you can kill if you get in a car wreck, Jeff, tomorrow, and you're not conscious anymore.
Right.
You know, hey, we can turn off life support,
right.
You know, then the question becomes, well, what about anesthesia? You're not conscious at that point. Are you alive? You know, what about when you go to sleep? You know, are you alive? So,
right.
So. You've got to take that philosophical, you know, if you're gonna put any point other than Genesis 1:27, which says that we're, you know, beautiful and we're created equally because we're created in the image of God, mm-hmm. From conception, from the beginning, that there's something that happens there. Mm-hmm. You really don't have a leg to stand on, you know, where you go.
Well, see, dear, we've seen, you know, with the Supreme Court ruling overturning Roe v. Wade and kicking that back to the states, we rejoice at that Obergefell decision. But to me, it's like, okay, well, it goes back to the states. I guess that's better. But I mean, it's wrong. So if Nevada says it's okay and Texas says it's not okay, it's either a person or it's not a person. Murder is wrong. It's not becomes right if you go to Nevada, you know. Well, it's wrong in Texas, but it's right in Nevada. And Bill Maher was the one that pointed that out. He said that it's inconsistent to say that. And if you believe, he said, I can, you know, and he's no friend of Christianity, but he said, I can respect that position that you just say this is murder. And he said it kind of is. He actually admitted this. He said it kind of is. I'm just okay with that. He said, we have there 8 billion people in the world. I'm sorry, we don't need you. You won't be missed. I mean, so cold-blooded,
yes.
But at least it's honest.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think we at some point, we're going to have to make that decision as a nation. And for each person individually, we're going to have to decide, okay, do you believe that life begins at conception? I mean, that's the basic question. When does life begin? And are you able to sustain that? Because any other way you go with, there's human inequality that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. There's the continuation of that that's going to lead to Nazi Germany and, you know, areas like that,
right,
where you're going to end up with these human inequalities. And so for us as Christians, I mean, we know that life begins at conception. We need to stand on that. And as OB-GYN, you know, it's beautiful to see life every single day. I do this in clinic and I notice it on ultrasound. I notice it when we deliver babies. There's no doubt in my mind that life begins at conception.
Right.
And so we really need to bring that up to the Supreme Court and say, hey, this is where we need to stand on. The law of the land needs to be the same, because, you know, we end up with issues where you do have that weirdness between states.
Well, I like to go back and forth with AI, and I use Grok 3 on the X platform. Talking to Grok a lot of times when it's an issue like this is like talking to Rachel Maddow or something like that. I always point that out to Grok. Give me your liberal bent on this, and Grok gets offended, but not really. But this idea that I tried to equate the scripture passages of offering your children in the fire to what we're doing today, and Grok was like, well, that's very different because these people having abortions it's not a religious thing. But it really is. It's this idea that I have autonomy, I can do whatever I want, my body, my choice, I want to live immorally, perhaps, because so many women have multiple abortions. It's not just, you know, all these abortions that are you know, all different women. A lot of them are 2, 3, 4, right, whatever it is. But it's their way of saying, I'm my own God, I wanna party and do whatever I want. It's sickening, the psychological toll that will take on women when they finally come out of the ether and, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning and they start hearing baby cries in their sleep and in their mind, in their conscience. Yeah. You really feel for those women.
You know, Jeff, one thing I've not seen, which is absolutely amazing, is that I've not seen a study that shows what the long-term psychological complications are for women who've had abortions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that'd be pretty easy. You know, we've been doing them since 1971, I think, or two. You know, so I've not seen a single study of long-term. Now, you know, I have plenty of anecdotal data in my clinical practice in a church and, you know, visiting with women who've had abortions. And the long-term complications that occur with that are truly horrific.
Yes.
You know, it changes women's lives. I mean, you're pitting a mother against the baby.
Yeah. Yeah,
that should never be the case.
No.
You know, and so that's so unnatural to be doing that. And those long-term complications, women, you know, a lot of them are holding this secret inside of them. And,
yes,
you know, as Pastor Chris says, you know, secrets will kill you. Uh-huh. You know, those secrets will. I mean, they just kind of fester and get worse and just really just destroy people's lives.
Yeah. Well, it really shows the power of the gospel. That because we have, I'm thinking about a girl that works for us at From His Heart Ministry. She's been on this program before, and she admitted, hey, I had two abortions, but she found grace, forgiveness in the blood of Jesus, and
Amen.
The Lord will forgive the worst of sins, as the song says, the vilest offender who truly believes that moment from Jesus, a pardon receives. And that's the great news we have to share. You know, as the Apostle Paul said, hey, I was a blasphemer and a persecutor and a violent offender, but I found forgiveness and grace in the Lord Jesus. I'm a trophy of His grace, and if God can forgive me, the worst of sinners, He can forgive you too. Mm-hmm. Well, when we're closing in on a break, but when we come back, we're going to start talking about the abortion pills and Mifepristone and Misoprostol, if I pronounce those correctly, Sudhir.
Correct.
But that's what is the big thing today. And you said 63% of abortions now are taking place through the mail.
Correct.
As women get these pills through a Teladoc or some kind of online prescription, and then get the pills mailed to them. And they're told it's as safe as Tylenol, which is a bold-faced lie. And these women are having lots of complications. You're seeing them come into the clinic,
to the ER, and you know, and we're having to deal with those complications.
Yeah, it's a terrible thing. And so we need to be told the truth. And we're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. You're listening to Real Truth for Today. And I'm your host, Pastor Jeff Shreve, the pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas, and the founder of From His Heart Ministries. From His Heart is heard every weeknight at 6 p.m. Central Time right here on American Family Radio. And I'm talking to Dr. Sudhir J. Aprabhu, obstetrician, gynecologist. We'll be right back.
This is Real Truth for Today. Podcasts of the program are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. Pastor Jeff Shreve here talking to Dr. Sudhir J. Aprabhu. He's a gynecologist and obstetrician here in Texarkana. He's been serving in that capacity for 25 years. A graduate of what school?
Texas A&M College of Medicine.
All right. Very good. And where'd you do your residency?
In Little Rock at UAMS.
UAMS in Little Rock. Well, I wanted to read from, we're talking about the issue of abortion and what people need to know, because we're being told lies from government entities and Planned Parenthood that has a stranglehold on so many in our government. This is what the Bible says in Psalm 106, beginning in verse 35, but they mingled with the nations and learned their practices. God's talking about his Old Testament people. They didn't destroy the peoples as the Lord commanded them. They served their idols, which became a snare to them because they learned their idolatrous ways. It says they even sacrificed their sons and their daughters to the demons, Chemosh, Molech, to name a few, the Baal, and shed innocent blood, the blood of their sons and their daughters, whom they sacrificed to the idols of Canaan, and the land was polluted with blood. With the blood. Okay, so Sudhir, our land is polluted with the blood of millions and millions. What is over 70 million babies have been aborted since Roe v. Wade?
Yeah, the problem is that we don't know a true number. In a country where we know exactly how many hysterectomies have been performed or any other procedure, this is such a great secret. There are two groups that keep up with the number. This would be the NIH and Gottmar Institute. Uh-huh. And one year, I was just looking back at the numbers, and I think it was about 5 years ago, there was a 400,000 difference.
Oh,
between
wow.
the two groups. And so we don't even know how many abortions are being performed because people don't report them. But we're estimating about a million a year are being performed in the United
and
States.
And most of that is from Planned Parenthood.
I can't remember the number, but it's not, about 40 to 50% are from Planned Parenthood.
Yeah, that's just a sickening organization. I liken it to Auschwitz or something like that. I mean, they just exist to kill babies. Okay, so Roe v. Wade gets overturned, and now people are getting drugs, the mifepristone and the misoprostol, and they get it in the mail. And now you can't have a doctor prescribe that in Texas and in other states, but in California, for instance, and other more liberal states, you can. So now women are doing this on their own. If you go to Planned Parenthood and have an abortion, some of those doctors are not very, they're kind of gorillas in there, and some of the horror stories we've heard. But now it's, You're flying solo without a net. I mean, you're in really serious waters as far as complications.
Yeah, the reason why these pills got started was the abortion industry realized they were in trouble because they couldn't find enough obstetricians to really perform abortions. So 90% of obstetricians don't perform abortions. So only, you know, you're getting down to the 10% that may. And so they just didn't have enough. They're at a staffing problem, essentially. So they came up with this idea of using pills that women can do on their own. And they got it through the FDA right at the end of Clinton's era. Sure. Uh-huh. And as he was leaving, they rushed it through with the idea that this was supposed to be a life-saving measure. And that's the rush method that they used to get it through. I mean, can you imagine life-saving? I mean, pregnancy is such a life-giving condition, right. and you bring it through that, and they had all these restrictions that they put in, like in person and having an in-person visit, making sure that the person prescribing it followed you through for the complications.
Then COVID. And there's a limit on how far along you can be before you take these.
Correct. Initially it was 7 weeks. You had to be 7 weeks, so you had to get an ultrasound. You had to make sure it was a pregnancy in the uterus and not an ectopic. And so you had all these safeguards, and then now they extended out to 10 weeks. And so you had all these safeguards that were in place for this drug. But with COVID, they ended up removing those restrictions more and more, mm-hmm. Saying that it was relatively safe, and started being able to mail this across, to based on televisits and telehealth. And what we're seeing on the ground is so different than what the FDA or what the what ACOG is saying actually happens. Mm-hmm. The complication rates are so much higher. As me, when I work in the ER, I see these complications. They're just so much higher than what we're being reported.
Yeah. So, okay. So a woman, she doesn't have a period, and she'll say, I'm late. And then she waits, and okay, and that's not coming. She takes a pregnancy test. She does all this at home. She finds out, okay, it's positive, I'm pregnant. What do I do now? I don't want to be pregnant. So what would be the process? What does she do? She gets a hold of some doctor on...
She gets online and finds a doctor, or she can go to a state that's that will kill babies and get with a doctor there that will prescribe that for her. But most of the time, this is happening online, which has been the big problem because, there's not the safeguards associated right. with it. So, we know of reports where men have gotten on there and given it to their
girlfriends,
who didn't want an abortion. We know of cases, one in Louisiana where a mom actually ordered this and gave it to her daughter, even though she didn't want
against
an abortion.
Her will, yeah.
And we know of a case in Texas where it was mailed across state lines into a state that's that doesn't want abortions, mm-hmm. and a woman gets into the hospital and gets seriously sick, and so these were both from a New York doctor. And what's happened is that now we've got states pitting against each other because Texas is saying, hey, this doctor has broken our law, and the New York governor is saying, no, we're going to protect our doctor,
right.
And so now we've got this fight happening as well. So there's just so many issues with what's happening, but most importantly, it's just not as safe as they say. The drug, the claim is that it's as safe as Tylenol, and what they've done with that is they've looked at Tylenol's deaths based on overdose. And so you take Tylenol incorrectly and you end up with this many deaths. And they've compared that to mifepristone and said, well, there's not as many deaths with the normal taking of mifepristone versus the...
So it's all skewed.
Yeah. So, it's not even a fair comparison. And if your listeners really want a good research paper on that, there was one that was recently published in Biotech in 2020, about 2 months ago, called The Origins and Proliferation of Unfounded Comparison Regarding the Safety of Mifepristone. And it does a great job of explaining this comparison and how off it is and how really unsafe these drugs are.
Okay, so Sudhir, if a woman thought she was pregnant, but she's not, because some women they're not regular on their cycle. And so she's saying, well, I'm late and I must be pregnant. Maybe she gets a false positive. Is it possible to get a false positive on the pregnancy test?
Rarely, but yes, it can happen.
But so if she's not pregnant, she gets these drugs and takes these drugs, what does it do to her?
Not a lot.
It wouldn't?
Yeah, a bunch of cramping, probably a lot of pain, but other than that, nothing.
She wouldn't have bleeding?
Right. Maybe.
Uh-huh.
Maybe.
The biggest problem with women that have complications that are pregnant and take these drugs is with the bleeding, it doesn't stop?
Well, so we have several. Bleeding is a big one. Infection, pain, and then, you know, it can lead to be a life-threatening condition. So the FDA actually has a black box warning that there's a very rare condition that can cause sepsis in this. And they also, you know, in their label, they say 1 in 25 women will go into emergency rooms. This is the FDA saying this. So, you know, I question the wisdom of, hey, is if you have those two things mm-hmm. and you're allowing people to get this drug telemedicine, right. I mean, come on, that doesn't make sense, you know, in and of itself.
And 1 in 25 is not even accurate, right?
Correct. And so recently there was a couple of research studies that were done where they looked at insurance data, and they found that 1 in 9 women ended up going to the ER because of a complication that they perceived. It was all ER data that they went into the ER. So the pushback on that is, well, that's not really a complication. You know, going to the ER is not really a complication, right? So it kind of depends on what you define complication. So if you know, some of the data that you see, they've taken out that going to the ER is a complication, you know, pain. I mean, some people describe this as, it's just horrible. A Norwegian study looked at 42% of the people rated their pain at 8 out of 10.
Wow.
So that's pretty significant.
And how long does that last?
Sometimes, you know, one woman kept going back to the ER in this study for a month
with the pain,
right? So they described it, quote, out of this world, much worse than giving childbirth, yeah. Days in hell. You know, I mean, those were the terms that they used to describe this pain. So do you consider that a complication? The FDA doesn't think so, you know.
Unless they have it. it's just terrible.
You know, do you consider the psychiatric stuff that we've talked about right. as a complication? You know, do you consider having to go to the ER and then having a surgical procedure as a complication? Some studies take those out because that's just completion of the procedure. So that's not really a complication.
Yeah, all of that's complicated.
Right. So, you know, it kind of depends on, you know, make sure you're comparing apples to apples here.
Right.
But if you really look at, you know, what women would consider as complications, we find that 1 in 9 actually end up with this, which is a pretty significantly yes. high rate. And then, you know, I mean, I love taking care of women, but, you know, when I do surgery and I do, I have a complication, I want to, you know, be involved,
sure.
you know, because the patient knows me, we've talked about it, and unfortunately, everything has complications with it, but we want a friendly face there, you know, and want to direct it and everything else the best we can. These women are left alone, they're across state lines, they're told, go to the ER and don't tell them you took these drugs, don't want them to know, you know, they may treat you differently, you know. So they're told all these lies and they're just like suffering in silence, mm-hmm. And we just don't appreciate that.
So Sudhir, if you had a woman come in that had taken these drugs and was having lots of pain, bleeding, what do you do for them?
Depends on what. Well, first, obviously, we'd evaluate what's happening. Mm-hmm. So if there's a heartbeat, that's a different story than if there isn't. So if a woman has taken this drug, and this is for your listeners overall, if they can get to us immediately, if they change their mind, and, you know, because I belong to a network called Abortion Pill Reversal Doctors, and I get calls every so often about women who get this drug across state lines, and they say they take the first dose in the emotional moment, and then they say, you know, Dr. J, please save my baby, you know.
Right, right.
And so there is a progesterone that we can give to reverse it. You know, it knocks off the mifepristone, the progesterone does, and works in reversing. It's not 100%. Obviously, we would rather them not take the drug.
Sure, sure.
But it is possible to reverse that. So if any of your listeners want to know where to go for that, it's abortionpillreversal.com.
Okay.
And get to us immediately if you can. But if there's a heartbeat, you know, that's one way of treating it. We mm-hmm. would try our best to control the pain, you know, try to keep the pregnancy going as long as
right.
possible, and proceed along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
If there's not a heartbeat and the baby's already died, then of course we would then proceed with trying to treat the best we can. So either we give Cytotec, which would continue cramping and expel the baby, or
do you have to do a DNC?
Sometimes.
Yeah. Okay, and what is causing all the pain?
The uterine cramping, uterus trying to get the baby out. It's labor, essentially.
Okay, and sometimes that can last for a long period of time.
Yeah, days.
Oh, wow. It's just horrific, and, I hate to say this, but you just got to take anything coming from the FDA. You got to take with a grain of salt. CDC, you got to take with a grain of salt. We know that those organizations have been compromised. There's lots of money involved in this. And Sudhir, there's one main company that makes these drugs, right?
Correct. And obviously finances are a big indicator of this. You know, I belong to a group called American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, and their leadership has taken a very left turn. Most obstetrician gynecologists, like I said, don't perform abortions, but their leadership has taken a left turn because of the funding associated with all of this. It's where the money is. And so the drug company also has a lot of money that they get out of this. And so, there's also the other side of it, which is, I think you pointed out earlier about how we just, don't need as many people. And so that's the other side of the argument that people will use, is they play God and they say, okay, you're not worth living and you're worth living, which is horrific, really start going down that road.
Well, the number one tenet of the Hippocratic Oath is do no harm,
right?
And abortion obviously does harm.
Yeah, it kills one person every single time.
Yeah, and as we talked about, the psychological harm that's done to women, it's hard to calculate that, but it's there. You can't do what they're doing without damaging your psyche. Well, you're listening to Real Truth for Today, and I'm talking to Dr. Sudhir J. Aprabhu, a gynecologist obstetrician. He's very involved in the fight for life. And when we come back from the break, we'll be taking your calls, 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. If you have a question or a comment, for Dr. J, we'd love to hear from you. If you have a testimony of God's grace in your life, that can really help somebody else. Just be concise, if you would. But we would love to hear from you, too. And, the Bible says, if you, Lord, should mark iniquities, O Lord, who could stand? But there's forgiveness with you that you may be feared.
This June marks 3 years since the overturn of Roe, but did you know that since then, the number of abortions has surged to a 10-year high? Preborn Network clinics continue to support women facing unplanned pregnancies, showering them with God's love and providing free ultrasounds. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, she's twice as likely to choose life.
It was like the beginning of my healing journey. They do an ultrasound. That's when everything changed. When I saw my baby and when I heard her heartbeat, that was it.
$28 sponsors one ultrasound and $140 helps to rescue 5 babies. Your generous tax-deductible donation also helps to provide women who choose life with assistance for up to 2 years. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or visit preborn.com/AFR.
If you'd like to contact Pastor Jeff, email PastorJeff@FromHisHeart.org. Now, back to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. Pastor Jeff here, talking to my good friend, Dr. Sudhir J. Aprabhu. Sudhir is a deacon in our church. He was chairman of the deacons last year and just a super guy with a great testimony. He's a gynecologist obstetrician here in Texarkana, and we're talking about the issue of abortion and the abortion drugs that people are taking. Women are taking mifepristone and misoprostol, and the lies that we're being told by the abortion industry that it's as safe as Tylenol. That's just not true. And if you do one of my frustrations with AI, they just parrot back I told AI this morning as I was having an argument with Grok. I said, I feel like I'm talking to Rachel Maddow. You know, you just parrot all the liberal talking points. And AI doesn't like to be called Rachel Maddow, but the good thing about AI is they don't have feelings. Anyway, so just using artificial intelligence doesn't give you the real story. Why is this happening? Well, the Bible tells us, but realize this, 2 Timothy 3:1, that in the last days difficult times will come, for men will be lovers of self, lovers of money, as we read in 1 Timothy chapter 6, for the love of money is the root of all sorts of evil, is a root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing for it have wandered away from the faith and have pierced themselves with self with many griefs. And so we see the love of money just permeating our society, and it's permeated the medical community. And Sudhir, I don't think it, you know, if you go back 50 years ago, 60 years ago, it seemed like doctors were in it for the right reason. You go back even longer than that, you had a country doctor that would go to people's homes and get paid in chickens or whatever he got paid. I mean, there wasn't this get rich quick by being a doctor scheme.
Yeah, and doctors are people. I mean, we're people as well, and we have bills, and we have
sure.
all sorts of other issues that, you know, that we need to deal with. So, greed gets into all areas.
But really, you know, as we think back to pioneer days and things like that, you would have a doctor that would be one guy for a pretty big right. area. He's that guy's working hard.
Right.
He's traveling all over the place, and he's doing everything. I mean, he was the specialist in every area. But it seems like the medical community really was do no harm. They that was sacred. They were really trying to help people. The pharmaceutical companies were creating drugs to help people, not just to make money. Making money was secondary. This is my thinking. Was secondary to the good of the patient. Now that seems to be flip-flop.
I think I don't know if I see that as much, Jeff. I mean, you know, I work with some great doctors. I work with people that in our community that are just, that do have the heart to help people. You know, of course, we want to make a living, and,
sure.
and we're getting pressured from insurance companies and everything
right,
else.
Right.
So we have, you know, our pressures to pay bills and pay our nurses and everything else. But you know, I think the heart is still there. But just like everything else, we can get sidetracked on that.
I see it less with doctors and more with administrative people, the hospitals, pharmaceutical companies, that kind of thing.
Correct. I think the leadership has a skew to that because that's all they look at. Whereas we're sitting, you know, in a room with patients,
right.
And I'm talking to patients. I want what's best for you, not necessarily what's best for the country, what's best for,
right.
you know, all these other, what's best for me as a business owner. You know, I want what's best for you in that situation. And I think that's the part we've got to get back to is getting face to face. And that's the problem with this pill as well, is because, you know, you're getting all these women that are suffering by themselves. And we've got to get back with the FDA to say, hey, come on, you know, you've got to get that
right.
meeting face to face with that.
Right.
But it also brings, you know, what can your listeners do? What can our listeners do? What can our brothers and sisters in Christ do? And the first thing that came to my mind was to pray. You know, you speak this verse a lot from the pulpit in our church, 2 Chronicles 7:17. Mm-hmm. If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sins and heal their land, you know, mm-hmm. and we've had a lot of bloodshed
yes.
shed in our land, and we really need that prayer. And you know, we always talk about prayer as just one of those things, but I think in the abortion side, this was a testimony for me, because when I was living in the faraway land, and finally got, you know, got beat up enough to turn to the Lord. First thing, you know, I started doing, or one of the first things I started doing, I came to you and we talked about this, was to start praying for abortion. And we started getting into, you know, I started praying for it, and I didn't think much of it. I was like, okay, let's you know, stop abortion. And then, you know, I started joining all of the other listeners that are praying for abortion. And then Roe v. Wade got overturned. I was like, whoa, this is cool. You know, God's doing a mighty work in our land. I mean, he's actually listening to our prayers. And I think we can do the same thing with this pill, is to start praying for abortion to stop completely and for our land to get healed. I think that's a huge part of it. Second thing that the listeners can do is to strengthen their apologetics on abortion. You know, we've gotten this story that obstetricians need abortions to
save lives,
right? And that's a blatant lie. In my 25 years, I have never had to perform an abortion, which is defined as intentionally killing a human being, intentionally killing the baby, to save a life. Now, I've had to, unfortunately, in some difficult circumstances, had to do deliver the baby prematurely to save the mother. And that's a different story, right? So it's like, you know, you're going into a building and you can only save one person and there's two people there. Well, you're not killing that second person. You're just trying to save that one person from the fire. So so that's a different story than, you know, then the thought of, okay, we need abortion to to save lives. We don't need abortion to save lives. And what that's also done is it's minimized the ability, sanctity of life in our society altogether. You know, I hear us sometimes saying, you know, and I've been guilty of this as well. Well, I'm against abortion except in the cases of rape and incest. I mean, you know, there should be no reason where we're for abortion. I don't say, you know, I'm against murder except, you know, if somebody comes into my house and I have to shoot them. You know, that's defined differently. And so we need to get away from that. We just need to go with, hey, we are, you know, life begins at conception, and this is why I feel, you know, I've got biological, I've got theological, I've got philosophical arguments for that, and I feel strong, and that's what apologetics does, right? It makes us feel strong about it. The third thing that I think would be important is being willing to talk to others. You know, Proverbs 24 11 to 12 says, rescue those being led away to death. Hold those, hold back those staggering towards the slaughter. If you say, but we knew nothing about this, does not he who weigh the heart perceive it? Does not he who guard your life know it? Will he not repay everyone according to what they've done? I mean, that's just, I think, just jumped out at me like, man, this is, you know, this is a verse for me. You know, we, the unborn don't have anybody to speak for them. We've got to step up and say that. In some cases, that may mean, you know, I'm not saying we have to just be out there preaching on the side of the street. You know, in some cases, it just may mean a kind word we say to somebody. We may share our testimony. You know, one in six responders of this study in 2023 from Family Research Council said that these were church members, admitted that they've paid for or encouraged or chosen to have an abortion.
Yeah, that affects a lot of people.
That's one in six in church. And so, you know, we have people that are hurt, that are just struggling still and keeping this inside and just saying a kind word, being open, like James says, being open to confession and being healed in our church, churches, you know, that's important. But then also, you know, reaching out to pregnancy resource centers and things like that to be able to help help with women that are walking through this. Because one of the main reasons why women go to abortion is not because, you know, it's because they don't have financial support. They feel like they're alone. The husband or the boyfriend doesn't want to pay for this baby. So there are all these social constraints as opposed to really not wanting the baby. And so so being a church that's out there to be able to help would be awesome as well.
Yeah. Very good. Well, we're going to the phone lines, 888-589-8840, and we have Charlotte on the line from Texas. Charlotte, welcome to Real Truth for Today.
Thank you. What I wanted to say is that I want to let people know that the Lord can make beauty out of ashes. In 1999, my 41-year-old husband, I was notified that he was in the ER, and because I'm medically trained, when I went into the ER and looked at his MRI hanging there, It was the worst day of my life. I saw a brain tumor on the MRI because I could read it. I didn't know that it was a death sentence. And they told me that he would live a year. And I had to go into his room that night without him knowing that and kiss him goodnight and tell him how much I loved him and see him in the morning. Turns out he lived a year, and I have been a widow 25 years. And in all honesty, the Lord has taken that tragedy and given me a life I never thought I would have. So I praise his holy name for that, and I want to thank you for taking my call.
Amen. Thanks for that testimony, Charlotte. Isaiah 61, the Lord does give beauty for ashes. And Sudhir, as we talked about, the psychological damage that so many women have, and boyfriends that encourage that, or husbands that encourage that, that doesn't just go away. I think it's probably harder for the woman to, you know, men can kind of compartmentalize things. Women have a harder time with that. And it didn't happen to the man's body. It happened to the woman's body. But as we said, you know, if the Lord didn't forgive, then we'd all be sunk.
Yeah.
And so all of us are terrible, horrible sinners in deserving of death and hell and separation from God forever. But that's what the cross tells us, is that Jesus paid it all to him I owe. And so whatever your sin is, if you'll confess it to him, and as you said, quit holding this as a secret, because it will eat you alive. Mm-hmm. It's a cancer of the soul. It's not going to just stay put in this little area that you can kind of put it in the dungeon, so to speak. It's going to come out. And so much better to confess it, forsake it, and receive God's mercy and grace. Well, Sudhir, what do you think, in the last few minutes, what do you think is going to happen with the FDA and these pills?
Well, this administration seems to be really searching for the truth, so I'm thankful for that. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, with our letter and everything else, hopefully, you know, they'll do their own study. All we're asking the FDA to do is, you know, they really haven't had a post-market surveillance of this pill to really look at the data and say, okay, is this, you know, what's going on? Is what ACOG is telling the truth, or is
ACOG, you know, is what?
American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology.
Okay.
That says, you know, this is as safe as Tylenol, is their version of it. And, or is, you know, are women really being harmed with this pill? And I think if they really look at the data, they'll find that, hey, we need to get back, at least at the minimum, put safeguards to say, okay, you got to see a doctor face to face. You got to have a couple of follow up visits. Make sure the doctor is involved in your life. Make sure we, as providers, walk with women through this difficult time, if that's what we choose to do, or hopefully even say, like they did with Vioxx a few years back,
ban it.
Yeah, and just say, you know, this is too dangerous.
What, Sudhir? Since there's a lot of money in this. And this is when a woman gets that, does insurance pay for these drugs?
No, it's all cash.
Okay, usually. And so how expensive is it to get that?
Don't know.
Okay, but I'm assuming they're making money on it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the
it's
bottom
a big industry.
The
I
bottom
mean,
line of abortion
is
money. So I'm surprised that more companies aren't making these drugs.
Well, it's currently it's under patent, so they can't.
Oh, they can't? Yeah. Okay. But you said that misoprostol has been around a long time?
Yes.
But not the mifepristone.
Mifepristone, I think, got approved at the end. When was Clinton in office?
In the 90s.
Yeah, so it was probably about maybe 20 years.
Uh-huh.
Would be my guess.
Okay, and that was that one company, whatever the name of the company is. Can you imagine that's your claim to fame?
Right.
That you have a drug that kills babies.
It's
just horrific. Well, Sudhir J. Oprabhu has been my guest today, and Sudhir's a dear friend and just a wonderful husband and dad and man of God, and makes a difference in our church every day. Makes a difference in many, many lives as a medical professional here in the Texarkana area, gynecologist, obstetrician. And Sudhir, thanks for coming on today.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff. I appreciate it.
Well, and I appreciate you, the listeners. And hey, if you had a question or a comment and you just didn't feel comfortable bringing that up on the air, you can always get me, Pastor Jeff, at fromhisheart.org. I can get a message to Sudhir if you have a message for him or a question. And we want to help you any way we can. Hey, go out today, shine for Christ, and share what great things the Lord has done for you. And know that God will use you as his witness. God bless you.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.